Hey guys, it's Leah B from Prestige Veteran Medical Consulting. I'm a U.S. Army veteran, physician assistant, and former compensation and pension examiner. So today I wanted to come on and do a video about what happens or what to expect in a VA compensation and pension exam for PTSD. I've done several videos about compensation and pension exams, and I've had a lot of great feedback on these, and I hope this one is also helpful. So when you file a claim for PTSD or you're going for an increase of your already service-connected PTSD, you are going to likely get a packet in the mail that's going to tell you where you're going to go for your CMP exam, who it's going to be with. There can be details about how long the doctor has been practicing, how long they've been doing these types of exams, and where and when it's going to be. Okay. So most of the time, this is going to be done by a doctoral level psychologist or a medical doctor or DO psychiatrist. Okay. It can also be, there are some circumstances where there are some other medical professionals that can be doing these types of examinations, like psychiatric nurse practitioners under the supervision of a psychiatrist or something like that. So it's always best if you've got questions on that to follow up with a legal professional. But for the most part, what I see is these are done by psychologists for the most part or psychiatrists. Okay. So let me pull up this DBQ. So you're going to go to the examination and they're going to fill out a disability benefit questionnaire for you. And I'm about to pop that on the screen so you guys can take a look. You can download these at va.gov so you can take a look at them. You can also bring them to your own treating doctor and ask them to fill it out. And hang on one second so I can present this. Okay, so this is the PTSD DBQ. Now, these are going to be some tough questions, all right? It might be an emotional experience for you, a significant emotional experience for you to go through some of this, but it's really important for you to be honest and truthful. I know that as veterans, sometimes we want to hold back and not talk about these things because it's very painful or it's hard to do, but it's really important that you prepare yourself, get your mind right, and do your best to, you know, just be honest. Some veterans may find it helpful to jot down a few notes to, you know, in case they get emotional and get sidetracked so that they can make sure that they're telling the doctor what their experience has been. Okay. So this first page is going to be just the name of the patient or veteran, their social security number, the, are you completing the DBQ at the request of the veteran or the claimant? So like if you brought this to your own treating doctor that's in your civilian practice, they may check at the request of you, the veteran. Are you a VA health care provider? Yes or no. Is the veteran regularly seen as a patient in your clinic? Yes or no. Was the veteran examined in person? So some of these can be done via telehealth. Okay. So that might be, you know, a no, and then they would put via telehealth. Diagnostic summary. So this is going to be completed based on your current exam and clinical findings. Does the veteran now have or have they ever been diagnosed with PTSD? Yes or no. So the doctor can actually diagnose you right there and then in the CMP exam with PTSD. They have the ability to do that. So for example, if you've never been seen before, you know, you're a Vietnam veteran, you've never wanted to get seen for this. I have a friend actually who her dad is a Vietnam veteran and she's been helping. He didn't file a claim for decades and decades and didn't even know that he could. And she's assisted him with that. And so he went to his CMP exam without having had any mental health care. And the CMP examiner diagnosed him with PTSD. Now, I wouldn't count on that to happen all of the time, but they are capable of doing that. They may just annotate, you know, no diagnosis, right? And you may not be exhibiting signs of that. You may think you have it and they may not agree based on the DSM criteria, which is the criteria they use to the diagnostic statistical manual is what they use to diagnose mental health conditions. But anyways, so have they ever been diagnosed with PTSD? We're going to just for now say yes for this person. The ICD code, that's a code that they're going to use. It's not really something that's super relevant to you. It's something the doctor will know. It's like medical lingo, right? Do you have other mental health disorders? Maybe you've got a substance abuse disorder. Maybe you've got depression and anxiety, insomnia. So if additional diagnosis beyond these ones up here that were listed, they're supposed to document them in here. Medical diagnosis relevant to the understanding or management of mental health disorder to include TBI. Comments, differentiation of symptoms. Do you have more than one mental health disorder diagnosed? Yes or no? Is it possible to differentiate what symptoms are attributable to each diagnosis? So if you've got multiple conditions, right? If you've got PTSD, you've got TBI, maybe it's hard to, there's an overlap of some of those symptoms, forgetfulness, sleep disturbances, things like that. Does the veteran have a diagnosed TBI? Apologies. So this section up here is if the symptoms overlap for just mental health conditions. This section is if they overlap with TBI, okay? Occupational and social impairment. Which of the following best summarizes the veteran's level of occupational and social impairment with regards to all mental health diagnoses? Okay, this first block is they do not have a mental health disorder or diagnosis. A mental health condition has been formally diagnosed, but symptoms are not severe enough either to interfere with occupational and social functioning or to require continuous medication. The next block is occupational and social impairment due to mild or transient symptoms, which decrease work efficiency and ability to perform occupational tasks only during periods of significant stress or symptoms controlled by medication. Occupational and social impairment with occasional decrease in work efficiency and intermittent periods of inability to perform occupational tasks, although generally functioning satisfactorily with normal routine behavior, self-care, and conversation. The next block is occupational and social impairment with reduced reliability and productivity. Occupational and social impairment with deficiencies in most areas such as work, school, family relations, judgment, thinking, and/or mood, or total occupational and social impairment. So one of these blocks is going to be checked, just one. The next section for the indicated occupational and social impairment, is it possible to differentiate which impairment is caused by each mental health disorder? Yes or no? If no, explain why. If a diagnosis of TBI exists, is it possible to differentiate which occupational and social impairment indicated above is caused by the TBI? Yes or no? And if it's yes, which one is attributed to the TBI, which is to the non-TBI mental health diagnosis? This is why a lot of times we'll see TBI and mental health conditions wrapped together. That's often something called pyramiding, which is something that you would want to talk to a legal professional about. They could go over it more. There's a lot of good blogs out there from some of these accredited law firms on that as well. Evidence review. What did they review? Nothing. Did they review? Did the VA provide records? Did you bring in some outside records? Recent history since the prior exam, relevant social, marital, and family history. So they're going to ask you questions about your marital life and your family history. They're going to ask you about your occupation and educational history, relevant mental health history to include prescribed medications and family mental health. So did your mom have bipolar disorder? Did your sister or your brother have depression? Relevant legal and behavioral history. So they're going to ask specific questions. Have you been arrested? Were you ever expelled from school, possibly? Things like that. Relevant substance abuse history. So if you've got some kind of substance abuse issue, whether it's alcohol, drugs, prescription medications, then they're going to go over the diagnostic criteria for PTSD. So the criterion A is exposure to actual or threatened by either death, serious injury, sexual violation, in one or more of the following ways. So did you directly experience the traumatic event? Did you witness a traumatic event? Did you learn about a traumatic event occurred to a close family member or a close friend? Cases of actual or threatened death must have been violent or accidental or experiencing repeated or extreme exposures to aversive details of the traumatic event, or no criterion met. Right? So did you get sexually assaulted on active duty? Did you witness someone else get sexually assaulted? Did you learn of a traumatic event? Maybe you were deployed and your battle buddy that you're on convoys with all the time, or that's in your squad, was killed out on the road, on the ISR or whatever. Maybe, you know, that is pretty traumatic. Maybe it's your roommate and they were injured seriously. That can cause some significant issues, right? Criterion B, presence of one or more of the following intrusion symptoms associated with the traumatic event beginning after the traumatic event occurred. Do you have recurrent, involuntary, and intrusive distressing memories? Do you have distressing dreams? Did you have dissociative reactions like flashbacks? Like you feel like the event is rehappening? Intense or prolonged psychological distress at exposure to internal or external cues that symbolize or resemble an aspect of the traumatic event? Can you watch movies related to, you know, I have a very difficult time. I don't like to talk about my own stuff, but I have a difficult time watching movies that are related to war events. They just get me super emotional and I'll cry. So I just avoid them. So mark psychological reactions to internal or external cues that symbolize or resemble an aspect of the traumatic event, or no criterion in this section. Criterion C, persistent avoidance of stimuli. So this is what I was talking about, that avoidance piece associated with the event beginning after the traumatic event occurred. Avoidance or efforts to avoid distressing memories, thoughts, or feelings. Avoidance of or efforts to avoid external reminders that arose, distressing memories, or none of the criterion in this section are met. Criterion D, negative alterations in cognitions and mood associated with the traumatic event, beginning or worsening after the traumatic event occurred, as evidenced by two or more of the following. Inability to remember an important aspect of the traumatic event, like dissociative amnesia. Persistent and exaggerated negative beliefs or expectations about oneself, others, or the world. Persistent distorted cognitions about the cause or consequences of the traumatic event that led to the individual to blame himself or herself. Persistent negative emotional state, markedly diminished interest or participation in significant activities. Feelings of detachment or estrangement from others. Persistent inability to experience positive emotions, or no criterion in this section have been met. So then there's going to be clinical findings. So this is why it's important that they have to see you in person or on a video chat, right? Because they need to be able to document some of these things. So irritable behavior, reckless or self-destructive behavior, hypervigilance, exaggerated startle response, problems with concentration, sleep disturbances. So some of these are going to be things you report, but then there are going to be physical examination findings that we'll go over as well. So duration of the disturbance is more than 1 month. The veteran does not meet full criteria for PTSD. Criterion G, the PTSD symptoms described above cause clinically significant distress or impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning, or the PTSD symptoms described above do not cause clinically significant distress or impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning, or you don't meet criteria, full criteria. Continued diagnostic criteria. The disturbance is not attributable to the psychological effects of a substance or other medications, or no criterion in this section are met. And then symptoms. So they're going to check all the ones that apply for you in this section. So do you have depressed mood, anxiety, suspiciousness, panic attacks that occur weekly or less often, or do they occur more than once a week? Near continuous panic or depression affecting the ability to function independently, appropriately, and effectively. You have chronic sleep impairment, mild memory loss, such as forgetting names, directions, or recent events, impairment of short and long-term memory, memory loss for names of close relatives, flattened affect, stereotyped speech, speech intermittently illogical, obscure, or irrelevant, difficulty in understanding complex commands, impaired judgment, impaired abstract thinking, gross impairment in thought process or communication, disturbances of motivation and mood, difficulty in establishing and maintaining effective work and social relationships. Are you getting written up at work a bunch? Are you having problems with friendships, or, you know, you have problems when you go to your kid's softball game, you don't get along with, the coaches, or you have problems with other parents? Are you just getting distressed all the time? Difficulty adapting to stressful circumstances, including work or work-like settings. Inability to establish and maintain effective relationships, suicidal ideation, obsessional rituals which interfere with routine activities, impaired impulse control, spatial disorientation, when we talk about spatial disorientation, it just made me think about how, my husband always says that I have no concept of spatial orientation, right? So I can't park my car, I can't pack things correctly in the trunk of my car, but I don't know if that's more of a me thing or what. But if you've noticed things like that, you have difficulty with spatial orientation, maybe more so than you had before, writing down some of these things can be helpful to, you know, really going over all of these symptoms in advance, going over this DBQ and maybe making notes so that when they ask you these questions, you're not just surprised. And then you think later, oh, you know, I should have thought of this and I could have told them this, but you were emotional during the examination. So delusions or hallucinations, grossly inappropriate behavior, persistent danger of hurting yourself or others, neglect of personal appearance and hygiene, intermittent inability to perform activities of daily living, including maintenance of minimal personal hygiene. Are you not showering? Are you not brushing your teeth? Disorientation to time or place, behavioral observations, just in general, the doctor can write. Other symptoms. Do you have other symptoms attributable to PTSD that are not listed above? Competency. Are you capable of managing your own financial affairs? And then there's a remarks section. And then the examiner is going to sign and document all their information. And that's pretty much it. So let me jump off this screen share. Okay. So again, these can be done by MDs, DOs, psychologists, some PAs and nurse practitioners if they work in a mental health setting, right? So I've worked for many years in a mental health setting in a substance abuse rehab, right? So depending on their specialty, a PA or a nurse practitioner can fill out these types of forms as well, and depending on their supervision, et cetera. So I hope this was helpful. They're going to send this back. Lastly, they're going to send this back to the VA, and then the rater or the adjudicator is going to look at all these blocks that are checked. There's so many blocks, and those really correspond with specific ratings. So, you know, they have to determine whether it's related to your service or not. So that's one thing. But then if it is related to your service, they then look at all these different blocks that are checked, and they will fit into a specific category, which will determine your disability percentage for that condition. So I hope this was helpful. Please drop some comments if you guys have any. And thank you for watching, and have a great day, guys.